Hello, and welcome to A History of Japan. Season 8, Episode 18, The Kenmu Shikimoku and the Jinno Shotoki, Bonus Episode. I'd like to begin today's episode by acknowledging that I overestimated the size of the actual Kenmu Shikimoku. I was originally planning on reading only a portion of it, thinking that its text would be far too long to read in its entirety, but the original document was only 17 articles, which, much like the constitution of Prince Shotoku, are actually quite succinct. Eventually, the Kenmu Shikimoku would stretch to over 400 articles, but the original document serves our purposes well enough here. If you especially enjoy the episodes where I read from original source documents like this, I recommend picking up a copy of Japan, A Documentary History, From the Dawn of History to the Late 18th Century. It is packed with fascinating historical documents as well as the context to go along with them. Being that it is a college-level textbook, it is rather expensive, but there are ebook versions available which, although on the expensive side for ebooks, are more affordable than the print variety. As usual, make sure you check your local library first. As you may recall, the Kenmu Shikimoku, or Kenmu Code, served as the legal foundation for the Ashikaga Bakufu, and was meant as an extension and renewal of the Joei Code of the Kamakura Shogunate. While I mentioned during the narrative episodes that the Ashikaga wished to be seen as restorers of the correct order, which was enforced during earlier versions of the Kamakura Shogunate, I will admit I was a little surprised to not only find some of this text praising some of the Hojo regents, but also reaching back further and claiming to restore the Engi era, something which followers of Emperor Go Daigo claimed to be pursuing. I think the best explanation for this is that the Muromachi Bakufu was trying to convince the people that it was their faction which possessed the mantle of restoring the better days of former times, rather than their political enemies. One final reminder, this document is significant for its effect on the shogunate's future rulers and leaders, and not representative of sincere beliefs held by the first of the Muromachi shoguns. Ashikaga Takauji had very little direct influence over its creation, which was done by a team of scholars who had previously been employed by the Kamakura shogunate. I will now read to you, in its entirety, the Kenmu Shikimoku, starting with the preamble. Should the Bakufu remain in Kamakura as before, or should it be moved to another location? If the people desire moving the Bakufu from Kamakura to Kyoto, then should not the government follow the wishes of the people? The way of government, according to the classics, is that virtue resides in good government. And the art of governing is to make the people content. We must therefore set the people's hearts at rest as expeditiously as possible. These are to be decreed immediately, but its rough outline is given below. 1. Frugality must be universally practiced. 2. Drinking and wild frolicking in groups must be suppressed. 3. Crimes of violence and outrage must be stopped. 4. Private houses which are owned by former enemies of the Ashikaga are no longer subject to confiscation. 5. The vacant lots existing in the capital must be returned to their original owners. 6. Pawn shops and other financial institutions may be reopened for business with protection from the government. 7. In selecting shugo for different provinces, men with special talents in administrative matters shall be chosen. 8. The government must put an end to interference by men of power and by nobility, as well as by women, Zen monks, and monks holding no official ranks. 9. Men in public offices must be told not to be derelict in their duties. Furthermore, they must be carefully selected. 10. Under no circumstances can bribery be tolerated. 11. Gifts received from different quarters while in or out of office must be returned. 12. Retainers who serve closely must be carefully selected. 13. Strive to attain decorum. 14. When men of integrity, righteousness, and honor are found, reward them accordingly. 15. Litigations brought by the poor and the inexperienced must be listened to with compassion. 16. Litigations brought by shrines and temples may or may not be heard depending on their merits, and must be carefully scrutinized with large shrines and temples placed under the tightest scrutiny. 17. The date for the issuance of a formulary on litigation must be set. Here ends the 17 articles. What follows is a sort of epilogue. The above 17 articles are described briefly. If we can emulate the virtuous rule of the sacred emperors Daigo and Murakami during the Engi and Tenryaku eras in the olden days, and if we can follow the more recent examples set by the father and son team of Hojo Yoshitoki and Hojo Yasutoki, we shall then be able to govern in such a way as to gain adulation from all the people, which shall serve as the basis of peace within the four seas. Next, we turn our attention to one of Ashikaga Takaoji's most determined enemies, Kitabatake Chikafusa. As one of the primary advisors to the Southern Court in the early days, part of Chikafusa's role was re-establishing the concept of divine rulership in Japan and enhancing the role which the emperor ought to play in governance. He wrote the Jinno Shōtoki, or Chronicles of the Authentic Lineages of the Divine Emperors, in 1339 while he was in Kanto. The son of Emperor Go-Daigo, Emperor Go-Murakami, had just been enthroned, and Chikafusa wrote this divine history to educate the young man from a distance while he tried to wage war on the Ashikaga partisans in the east. We will start with the introductory paragraphs in which Chikafusa lays the foundation for his claims of divine sovereignty. Part 1. Great Japan is the divine land. The heavenly progenitor founded it, and the sun goddess bequeathed it to her descendants to rule eternally. Only in our country is this true. There are no similar examples in other countries. That is why our country is called the Divine Land. During the Age of the Gods, Japan was known as Toyo Ashihara no Chiho no Aki no Mizuho no Kuni, or the land of abundant reed plains, 1500 autumns, and fresh rice ears. This name was used from the time when heaven and earth were separated, and can be found in the directive that the heavenly progenitor, Kuni no Tokotachi no Mikoto, presented to the male and female deities, Izanagi and Izanami. The name also appears in the mandate that the sun goddess Amaterasu Omikami gave to her heavenly grandson, Ninigi. It may therefore be regarded as the original designation for our country. Another name for Japan is Oyashima, the land of eight great islands, which derives from the fact that Izanagi and Izanami created the country in the form of eight islands. Still another name for Japan is Yamato, taken from a province in the middle of the land of eight great islands. The eighth deity produced by Izanagi and Izanami was Ame no Misora Toyo Akizune Wake, who was designated Oyamato Toyo Akizu Island. Today, this island, Honshu, is divided into 48 provinces, the most central of which is Yamato. Because of its centrality, Yamato served for generations after Emperor Jimmu's eastward campaign as the imperial seat and because Yamato held the imperial seat, its name was applied as well to the rest of Japan. In a similar manner, China was for a time called Chō because the ruling dynasty emerged from that state. Later, the country became known as Han because the succeeding dynasty arose in the state of Han. The name Yamato may come from the expression Yama-ato, or mountain traces. In early times when heaven and earth had divided but the wet mud below had not yet coagulated, people could only move about on the mountains. The traces they left at the time were called Yama-ato. Another possible meaning for Yamato comes from the word to, which in the ancient language of Japan meant dwelling. Perhaps it was because people dwelt in the mountains that the country became known as Yama-to. Kitabatake Chikafusa displays an incredible knowledge of the world as further into the document he elaborates on Japan's history as compared to India and China. The origin of things in our country whereby the world was produced by the descendants of the gods on high bears some resemblance to the creation story of India. A significant difference is that, from the time of the heavenly founder Kuni no Tokotachi no Mikoto, there has been no disruption in dynastic succession in Japan. Rather, our country has been uninterruptedly ruled by the sovereigns of a single dynastic line. In India, the first sovereign, the People's Lord, was selected by the people and was succeeded by his descendants. But in later generations, many members of the Lord's line perished, and even a man of mean origins, if he possessed the military power, could become king or rise to be ruler of all India. China is also a country that tends strongly toward disorder. In early times, when life in China was simple and the right way prevailed, men of wisdom were selected to occupy the imperial office. But no single immutable dynastic line was founded, and whenever the country lapsed into disorder, people mustered their forces and contended for hegemony. Men arose from among the common people to become emperors, and there were also cases of barbarians who emerged and seized control of the country. In still other cases, hereditary vassals surpassed their lords and ultimately succeeded to the emperorships held by the latter. Since the time of the first ruler, Fu Xi, there have been 36 dynastic changes in China. The resulting disorder has been unspeakable. It seems especially pertinent to include Chikafusa's thoughts on Emperor Daigo, the sovereign whom Go Daigo Tenno wished to emulate in his style of direct imperial rule. The following are some selections from the section in which he discusses Emperor Daigo. Though he mentions the feud between Fujiwara's Tokihisa and Mitsukane, I've skipped over those sections for the sake of brevity and relevance. Emperor Go Daigo was only 14 at the time of his accession, but although young in years, he possessed both wisdom and good sense. In ancient times, as we have noticed, minors did not accede to the throne in our country. The first minors to become emperors were Seiwa and Yosei, but during their reigns, Fujiwara no Yoshifusa and his son Mototsune governed the country as imperial regents, Sessho. Emperor Daigo assumed the imperial office at the age of 14 and personally conducted the business of state without the aid of a regent. This emperor reigned over the land for many years, and the virtue of his rule exceeded even that of ancient times. The country was at peace, and the people were tranquil. It was indeed a kind of rule comparable to Nintoku's in the remote past of our country, and to the wise ways of government of Yao and Shun in China. Lastly, I thought it would be interesting to explore Chikafusa's thoughts on the origins of the Kamakura shogunate and the person of Minamoto Yoritomo in particular. This passage begins with his thoughts on the many incidents involving Yoritomo's cousin, Minamoto Yoshinaka. Yoshinaka was guilty of many excesses and aroused the ire of retired Emperor Go Shirakawa. It was apparently because of this that some of Go Shirakawa's courtier attendants even sought to muster military force to oppose Yoshinaka. But they were unsuccessful, and the Minamoto chieftain's behavior became even more outrageous. At this point, Yoritomo in the eastern provinces sent his younger brothers Noriyori and Yoshitsune, who promptly destroyed Yoshinaka. Noriyori and Yoshitsune then headed for the western provinces and quelled the Taira. Once heaven's fortune has run out, even the most crafty of foes can be readily destroyed. But the continuing distress of the people was a result of the disasters of the age and seems to have been beyond the power of the deities. Thus the Taira were destroyed, and it looked as though the emperor would truly rule over the country again as he had in the past. But Yoritomo's achievement was without parallel in history, and it was in fact he who came to exercise power as he saw fit. Moreover, since the emperor delegated authority totally to Yoritomo, the court's own influence declined even more. When Yoritomo assigned Shugo to the various provinces, the authority of the provincial governors was thereby reduced, and the office of governor became merely an empty designation. In addition, the appointment at this time of Jito to all estates and other private landholdings virtually rendered the office of estate proprietor meaningless. Yoritomo held the junior fifth rank, lower grade, and was former assistant captain of the Right Palace Guards. As a reward for dealing with Yoshinaka, he was advanced several ranks to senior fourth rank, lower grade. And for subduing the Taira, he was similarly promoted to the junior second rank. At the beginning of the Kenkyu era, 1190-1198, Yoritomo went up to the capital for the first time as Lord of Kamakura and was immediately appointed Provisional Major Counselor and General of the Right Inner Palace Guards. He repeatedly refused these appointments, but the emperor pressed them upon him. Even after accepting them, Yoritomo soon resigned the offices and returned to Kamakura. He was later appointed Sei Tai Shogun, and from that point on, the administration of the country fell completely under the control of his government in the east. Shigafusa speaks fondly of Hatakeyama Shigetada, who is rendered as Taira no Shigetada in this selection. For a more recent example of an unselfish minister, let me return to the Bunji era, 1185-1189, in Yoritomo's time. When the Minamoto chieftain himself led a campaign of subjugation against Fujiwara no Yasuhira in Mutsu, Taira no Shigetada performed with distinction in the van of Yoritomo's army. As a result, Shigetada was offered his choice of reward from among any of the 54 districts of Mutsu. Yet Shigetada selected and was granted an exceedingly small district called Nagaoka. It appears that he did this to allow as wide a distribution as possible of rewards to other deserving people. Shigetada was indeed a wise man. However, about a paragraph later, he also characterizes the Kenmu restoration with exceedingly rosy hindsight. Today, there are none who think anything at all like Shigetada and Yoritomo. Instead, there are only people who, in all matters, disdain their lords and trumpet their own merits. Not only have the ways of the Kanto warriors of Yoritomo's time changed, the nobles also no longer behave as they once did. There are those who, for this reason, grieve over what the world is coming to. Nevertheless, for a while during Emperor Go Daigo's restoration, there truly appeared to be unity once again under the court. Everyone flocked to the capital, and Kyoto flourished. Although this final passage is not the closing paragraph of this work, it is near the end, and I think serves well to sum up not only Chikafusa's objectives in writing this book, but his expectations for the new Tenno, Emperor Go Murakami. In ancient times, Emperor Chuai died in a temporary palace erected for his campaign against the Kumaso. Whereupon, Empress Jinggu soon pacified Korea, quelled the rebellions of various princes, and installed her son Ōjin as emperor. In our present age, Emperor Go-Daigo has been blessed with a truly royal destiny. Having asserted unified imperial rule over the land after a disruption of 170 years, he has himself effected transfer of the throne to his successor. Ashikaga Takaoji, a thief without merit or virtue, rose in the world and for some 4 years distressed the imperial mind and now has caused the emperor's death. Should the great resentment that Emperor Go-Daigo held against Takaoji go unavenged? Inasmuch as the new emperor is also a direct descendant in the imperial line from the great goddess Amaterasu, how can anyone dare go against his imperial authority? Although the country is now disordered, his succession is surely in itself a sign that unity will once again be restored. What a lovely positive note to end on. Of course, we know that it was Takaoji and not Chikafusa who established a lasting government after the failure of the Kenmu Restoration. Still, Chikafusa's eloquence resulted in the Jinno Shotoki's survival long after his death and the surrender of the southern court. Next time, we will enjoy some of the poetry of the early Muromachi period, especially the lyrical stylings of Nijō Yoshimoto, Shōtetsu, and even Imagawa Ryōshun. Until then, thank you for listening. If you would like access to exclusive bonus episodes, as well as ad-free versions of the regular episodes, please consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/ahistoryofjapan.